Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, the 26th day of June, 2011. This is episode 782. Enjoy. Well, a good day to you. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk about gardening. No. Home improvement. No. Realist. Oh, technology. Yeah, that's it. That stuff that's, with the chips in it. The computers and the internet and the cell phones and the camcorders and the MP3 players and all that stuff that's making you tear your hair out and go crazy. The phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO. If you want to ask for help, if you want to say, please, Leo, talk me down, man. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. If you're outside the U.S., you can still call that number, 1+1-888-827-5536. You just use Skype out to do that. And because it's a toll-free number in the U.S., it shouldn't cost you anything on Skype. I don't know what's going on with Skype, though. You know, Microsoft bought them. $8.5 billion. Om Malik, writing on GigaOm this week, says, "Wow, the ugliness around Skype keeps getting bigger and bigger. It's fast becoming a poster child of investor greed and corporate mistreatment of its employees." Earlier this month, they fired a bunch of executives. GigaOm thinks that that's because the investors, the people who put money into Skype, who bought Skype from eBay, just wanted to improve their bottom line. Extract maximum value is the phrase they use. Business Week this morning reported, or actually, I guess it was a couple of days ago, reported that the vested options, you know what, when you join a tech company these days, they give you a little piece of the company. They give you options to buy stock at a what they call a strike price. Usually the strike price is the price of the stock when you join the company. Sometimes it's a lower number. And after you work at the company for a certain amount of time, you get vested. That means you have the right to sell those options, to buy the stock, then sell the stock and make money if the company's done well. Employees who have vested options are learning that the purchase from eBay kind of aced them out. That the agreement included a repurchase right that gave the investors the ability to buy back the shares at the strike price, at the grant price. So in effect, acing out any profit the employees might have made. Lots of upset going on right now. And then people are figuring that maybe Microsoft will help them out. I don't know. It's kind of a mess. Did the investors, you know, the thing is, the problem is, if this is the case and the people who were working to make Skype a useful program are all being taken for a ride, I don't think that the program itself's got much future. No wonder it started to go downhill in the last version. You wonder, are they actually breaking Skype because they're so upset? Corporate mismanagement is rife. Sony apparently laid off its security staff right before the attacks. Boy, that turned around a bit. I mean, they've been hacked more than 20 times in the last month. Guess they didn't need that security staff after all. And Lulzsec, you following them? They're the hacker group that has been attacking all sorts of people, including federal law enforcement in the UK and the US. They claim the some of the attacks on Sony. They say, according to Nick Bilton writing in the New York Times, they're done. British police arrested a kid, a 19-year-old kid, they claim was the gang leader of Lulzsec. Lulzsec said, no, he just ran our chat channel. Look at Jude Dan, the guy who runs our chat channel. He just runs our chat channel. He didn't know anything. In fact, now we're finding out the kid probably had Asperger's, a kind of a form of autism, which is not unusual in the hacker community. But I don't know if he's the mastermind. Lulzsec posted a statement on Pirate Bay. That's appropriate. Saying its six members had decided to quit. They've given up, but on their Twitter feed, they told other hackers, continue to hack, but we're done. I wonder if maybe that has something to do with that bust. Maybe that was the mastermind. Or is it just for the lulz again? It's just... Now Telstra, the Australian internet service provider that is partly owned by the Australian government, they were about to institute a censoring system, a blacklist system for bad websites in Australia, very controversial. And apparently they're now hesitating to deploy their internet filter, feeling reprisals from Lulzsec. That's how powerful these six hackers are. Man, we might not do this anymore. We're afraid. Wow, that's an interesting... A government-run internet service provider afraid of these hackers. And the Winklevi are back in the news. You probably remember them from the movie The Social Network. They were the twin crew members at Harvard who claimed that Mark Zuckerberg stole the idea for Facebook from them. Delayed them, you know, for months while he wrote Facebook. They had hired him to write their version of it. And you saw the movie, right? And then they sued in court and they won. Apparently they won around $60 million. You'd think, you know, they'd go home happy. But then they found out, or they believed they found out that Facebook had lied to them about the value and they should have won much more money. So they went back to court. They were actually going all the way to the Supreme Court. We learned this week they decided not to go to the Supreme Court. But they're not giving up either. They're going to continue to sue. I guess, you know, they got nothing else. What are they going to row crew the rest of their life? This is their job now. To continue to sue Facebook. 7 years this has been going on. And while they aren't going to go to the Supreme Court, they just filed a new lawsuit. Just to keep things alive. I wonder, somebody in the chat room, Wookie PC, is saying, maybe they spent all that $60 million on lawyers. They need more money. Back to the well. Meanwhile, Mark Zuckerberg's being sued by a guy who has spent time in jail, I believe, for a wood pellet scam. He claims that he gave Mark Zuckerberg a couple of $1,000 to start Facebook, and in return, Zuck gave him half of Facebook, and he wants it. He said, I'm back. I want half of Facebook. Wow. Do you play any of the PopCap games, Plants vs. Zombies, Peggle, any of that? Apparently, PopCap is for sale. We're not sure exactly who. According to TechCrunch, the tech blog, it's Electronic Arts, the big gaming company that wants to buy them. And get ready for this. $1 billion for the company that makes Bejeweled, Peggle, and Plants vs. Zombies. Boy, that tells you how much $1 billion, how much gaming is worth today. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. If we could talk about that or anything that's on your mind, if you want a new cell phone, there's a bunch coming out this summer. There's lots of Apple news. Apparently, Apple is building MacBook Airs like crazy for a new release next month to go with its new operating system, Lion. Everybody says these new MacBook Airs are going to be so popular, Apple is ramping up its production to the highest level it's ever been, getting ready to sell these little, light, tiny notebooks. Other companies are making similar notebooks because the Air is doing so well. We can also talk about the iPhone 5. Is that what they're going to call it, or the iPhone 4S? I think that's going to be out in September. We can speculate on that. Or maybe you're in the market for an Android phone. We'll talk about that too. 888-ASK-LEO. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Lynn tried to get in all day yesterday, and her cell phone is dying, and she's got some questions. So, Lynn, I'm going to take you first. Thank you for being so patient.
Oh, thank you for being so kind. I'll have an easy question first. I just bought an iPad, and I want to download a navigation system, but I want one that'll talk to me, and I wondered if you had any recommendations.
Yeah, my strong recommendations, one I really like, is MotionX GPS Drive.
MotionX
GPS Drive. Now, what you're going to look at, you know, how much they're, you know, the TomTom app is $100. A lot of these apps are very expensive. The MotionX is just a few dollars. But then you go to the in-app purchase, and you can add turn-by-turn directions, which is what you want. But it's a subscription, and it's not very expensive. It's a lot cheaper than a GPS, and it's one of the best GPSs I've ever used, mainly because the iPad screen is so big. So you're going to look at this and say, wait a minute, 99 cents for a GPS? What? But
yeah.
That's a good deal.
I never would have looked at that one.
I know. But a year of live voice, that's the turn-by-turn directions, $19.99. So basically it's $21 a year, $20 a year and $1 to buy. And this is so great. It works on your iPhone as well. But I love the iPad version because of that big screen. So this is the one I use like crazy. I love it.
Oh, I'm so glad I asked you. That sounds perfect.
Now, there's one negative on this. It downloads the maps from Google. So that's why it's so cheap. It doesn't have the maps built in. It does cache them, but you do need to be able to get online to get the maps as you drive around.
Okay, well, I've got 3G, so that's not a problem.
It works.
Right?
I've never had a problem with it yet.
Okay, well, I'll give it a try. Now I have a rather frustrating situation that I'm involved in. When I got my iPad, I wanted to open up an iTunes account, and let me just shorten the story. I've been emailing back and forth with Apple support for about a week now. They told me that when I first entered my ID, which was my email, I entered the number 8. My email has an 18 in it. And I can't get into it either way now. They keep telling me they've sent me a verification email, but I don't get an email.
All right, so it's got the wrong email address. Just throw that account out and start over.
But when I try to start a new account using my accurate email, it tells me there's already an account at that address.
Oh, and it won't let you start a new one. Well, there's a couple of things you could do. Obviously, they do have your address, and so that means that their reactivation emails are coming to you. They're probably getting caught by the spam filter and put in the spam folder or somehow blocked.
Well, they're not in my spam.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. They have your email address, obviously.
They don't know what to tell me either.
There's no answer to that question. So what you should do is go to Gmail, make a brand new email address that you've never used
before. That's what I did.
Yeah. Do you use Gmail in general? Do you use Gmail?
No, I've never used it.
Okay. Because one of the nice features of Gmail is you can make an infinite number of differentiated addresses for the same address by just adding a plus sign and a word. So you could have, you know, leo@gmail.com. And if you make it leo+iTunes@gmail.com, iTunes thinks that's a different email address. But Gmail thinks it's the same address. So it's one of the advantages.
Okay.
So you made a Gmail account. It's free. All of the Apple mails will go to the Gmail account. That's nice. Keeps them out of your inbox.
Well, that's probably what I'm going to have to do. But can you just answer this? Can somebody else have an Apple ID at my specific email account, using my email?
Well, it would come to your email address, so you'd know it.
Yeah, so they couldn't. So something's wrong in the system.
Okay. It's possible that... Did you try to change the email address at some point?
Yes.
Okay, so here's what's happening. Yeah, I think I understand now. So you mis-entered your email address the first time out. You know, you put Lynn8 instead of Lynn18.
Correct.
And then you said, I'm going to change that back to my real address. The problem is that in order to get... they have to get you to approve the change... So the approval email, the activation email is going to the bogus address.
I think that's what's happening.
Sure. So now you're stuck in a loop because you can't get to the bogus address.
Exactly.
And you can't convince Apple that... Can't you tell Apple can you throw that address out and let me start over?
I'll try that. I mean, I've just been going back and forth with them.
I think that, just use the Gmail. But I see what's happened, which is you create it with a typo in the address. They keep sending emails to that address, even though it doesn't exist, saying, hey, Lynn wants to change the address to a different address. That's a good thing. I mean, you don't want people changing your account address without your permission.
Right.
The problem is it's going to a bogus address, so no one's there to say, yes, it's okay.
Right. That's what I think is happening.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, I set up my Gmail, so I can still download stuff.
And don't worry about it. Nobody's using it. In fact, you can't use it. It's just
it's a dead
account. But so what? It's just a dead account. It doesn't really matter.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your recommendation.
You're welcome, Lynn. And I'm sorry about the trouble with all this. Apple should the way Apple should handle this, and who knows, they may, I don't know, but the way they should handle it is you should be able to call them up and say, I screwed up. Please deactivate all accounts with any of those addresses. I guess the reason they might not do that is because maybe you aren't Lynn. How would they validate that was you saying that?
Because I asked them to call me, and they said we can't call.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't have your number. I mean, kind of basically you've kind of mangled that address permanently. But that's not a big deal. You don't need that. That Gmail will be fine.
It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Sure, Lynn. Thanks for calling. I'm sorry it took so long to get through. I mean, otherwise somebody could call up and say, hey, my name's Leo Laporte, and please deactivate my account. And Apple, what is Apple going to do? They're not going to say, okay. They're going to say, well, we'll send you an email. But leo18@gmail.com, there's no address there, so there's no way they can fix that.
Right.
That's the real problem.
All right, I'll try it.
All right, Lynn, thanks for the call. I appreciate
it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Yeah, tech support is a dirty business, isn't it? Don't, just have some sympathy for the people on the other end of the line, because that's a hard thing. And then after they deal with you, Lynn, then they have to deal with somebody else and somebody else and somebody else and somebody else all day long, people yelling and screaming at them. And it takes a certain person, a certain type of person to do that. It's a very difficult job. And for most companies, it's probably one of their biggest expenses. I just read a statistic that Apple makes as for HP to make as much money on a computer that as Apple makes on selling one computer, HP has to sell seven. Because the pressure on HP, because of all the other PC manufacturers, is to keep prices really low. And you notice PC prices are really low. Well, how do you save money on that? Well, you skimp on components. You don't use the best. You try to make better deals. And most importantly, you unbundle support. You use the cheapest possible phone support people. Because every phone support call costs you about $25, and you're giving this away for free, right? So if the margin on this HP computer is $50, and frankly, folks, it's probably not even that high, two calls to support, and they have now not made any money on that computer. Meanwhile, Apple's made hundreds of dollars, so they can afford to support you a little bit better. Not perfect, but better. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson coming up. This must be Scott's music. It's like a klezmer band. Do you have a billboard for me, Kyle?
Yeah. Sorry, Leo. It's for DSL Extreme.
This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by Klezmer Band! No, brought to you by DSL Extreme for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866 the number 2 GetNet to get DSL Extreme. All right, don't tell me Scott Wilkinson is here, right?
Yep, I'm here. That could only be me.
What kind of weird wind instrument was that?
This is my Balkan brass band, not my band.
Oh, it's Balkan? It sounds like a Klezmer band.
It's similar, it's related. But there's an amazing tradition of brass music in the Balkans, in Serbia and Bulgaria and so on. And so I recently, about a year ago, joined this Balkan brass band, and it's got several trumpets, several euphoniums, which I play, and a tuba and some percussion.
It's quite cool. I like it.
It's really, it's kind of raucous and raw.
It sounds
you know?
Like ska. It's a little bit of ska with mixed with the klezmer.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And it's mostly for dancing. And
yes, no,
this,
you could tell. I actually was dancing. You couldn't see because I danced very mostly with the lower lip out.
We stand in the middle of the room. The band stands in the middle of the room in a tight circle and plays while the dancers dance in a circle around the band.
Oh, wow.
It's really cool. It's really cool. So anyway, I just thought I'd, you know, I'm going to start feeding Kyle some bumper music of some of my stuff. So watch out.
Okay. We'll look forward to that, won't we, folks? Okay. Let's Scott, besides playing the euphonium and other oddball wind instruments, including the vuvuzela.
Yes, indeed.
He is the editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine, ultimateavmag.com, columnist for Home Theater Magazine. In other words, he knows this stuff. And, you know, I just bought, I actually was going to ask you if these are good speakers. I just bought, you know, we're building a whole new studio.
Oh, yeah.
And every radio station I've ever worked in, you have speakers in the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Not this one. The studio has no speakers.
Wait a second.
Well, I'm always wearing headphones, and I thought, I don't need speakers. But this, so the new studio, I thought, well, I should get some speakers. I don't know why. I guess so I could have, I could dance around in my klezmer outfit.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I got an interesting email from a company that makes very stylish speakers, Orb Audio. Have you ever heard of them?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, okay, good. That's a good sign that you've heard of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
They make these, they look like, you know, the whole new studio is very, what they call steampunky. It's as if technology had arrived in the Victorian era. It's Victorian plus technology. And so it's, you know, it looks like Captain Nemo's submarine in 20,000 Leagues
Under the Sea. I totally
love it. It's a very cool look. And these speakers look like that. They have, you know, little speakers.
They're little spheres.
They're hammered brass or copper. Yeah, they're little spheres. So are they okay?
Yeah, from what I've heard, I don't think I've ever actually sat and listened to them at any length, but from certainly everybody that I talk to says that, yeah, those, and also Anthony Gallo is another company that makes similar speakers. They're surprisingly good.
They're tiny. I did get the subwoofer so that I can rock.
Good, good. I'm glad of that.
And it comes with a Pile Pro amplifier. I don't know if that's good or not.
You know, that's very interesting you should mention that. I have a Pile Pro microphone mixer that I use in my sound system, my live sound system, and so Pile Pro. I'm actually quite impressed with that mic mixer. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if this little amplifier is pretty darn good.
So it's kind of a little mini audiophile system.
And
I just
bought it
for the looks, not for the sound. But I'm glad. I'm relieved to hear that it might sound okay.
Yeah, well, I think it should. Yeah. Everybody I've heard of who has heard them has said, yeah, those are pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, good.
They're not very expensive either.
No, well, I mean, it depends what yours. I mean, for computer
speakers, it depends on your definition.
$300 for a pair of computer speakers is pricey, and then you add the subwoofer and the amp. And
yeah, okay. But you're going to get, I think you're going to get good sound out of them.
Well, good.
Yeah.
You think that's bad? You should see the steampunk laptop I ordered. But I'll tell you about that. Oh my goodness! This thing has gears that move in the top, and you turn it on with a key, and you wind it. It's a USB key, but it has a key, and you wind it, click, 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 and it doesn't go on until you do that a few turns.
Oh my!
It's very strange.
Oh, that's very
data,
cool.
Datamancer.com. They're very pricey, but I thought, well, I'm going to treat myself. I've got a new studio. I should have the strangest-looking laptop in history in there. Steampunk laptop. So let's talk about home theater. I'm sure you have some questions.
Oh, I got tons of questions. I get a lot of questions every day, and keep them coming by all means, because I'm answering them on ultimateavmag.com and hometheater.com. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be doing yet more of that because I'm getting a lot of questions. And it's really, I think, a service that not too many journalists in my trade really spend a lot of time on. So I want to do that because it's so important. The industry and all the technology and the stuff that we talk about every week is very confusing. And a lot of people are confused. So I really am very happy to be answering questions. For example, here's one from Mike Weyer, who has a 16:9 front projection system. Okay, so it's the standard aspect ratio of home of high definition TV. But he watches mostly movies. So he wants a projector that will natively display 2.35:1 aspect ratio, which is the aspect ratio of widescreen movies. But the problem is when you display that wide a movie on a 16:9 screen, you get black bars on the top and bottom, and everybody hates those black bars.
Yeah, but that's because 16:9 is not the movie theater ratio, it's the television ratio.
Correct.
Now, so if I watch The Sopranos HD on HBO, it's right. Exactly 16:9. It fills the screen.
Correct.
Looks great. But
yep.
Then I watch Lawrence of Arabia, and I've got those big black bars.
Big black bars. So what you can do is you can, if you have a projector, you can buy a 2.35:1 screen that's much wider than your typical high definition screen. But then you have to fill that screen, and there's two ways to do it. One is to put an extra lens in front of the projector, and the projector has to have this capability to adapt to this extra lens. It's called an anamorphic lens, and it's very expensive, typically in the thousands of dollars, just for the lens, just for the piece of glass.
Wow.
And you can put it on a sled, a motorized sled, and move it into position in front of the main lens when you want to watch a 2.35 movie, and then move it out of position when you're watching 16:9 content. But that's a very expensive option. There's a much less expensive option, which is only available on a few projectors. The one that I know best is the Panasonic PTAE 4000, which I think lists for something on the order of $3,000, which is not bad for a front projector. And what it does, which is so interesting, is it has memories in the projector whereby you can zoom the main lens so that it fills the screen, the 2.35 screen, with image, and the black bars are simply, they're being projected, but they're beyond the borders of the screen. So they're just projecting onto the wall.
Yeah, but you got a problem, Scott, because not all movies are the same ratio.
Yes, that is correct.
So you bought a screen, but then you go out and get Lawrence of Arabia, which was CinemaScope, and you still have black bars.
Well, here's the thing with lens memory, though, which is so cool.
Okay.
You can store different zoom and focus settings in these different memories. So you could have one memory for a 2.35 movie. You could have another memory for Lawrence of Arabia. You could have another memory for 16:9. And what happens is the height of the image stays the same, and the sides come in and out. So when you're watching something that isn't as wide as 2.35, you will get black bars on the sides of the image. You know, you can't get away from this. Different program material has different aspect ratios.
Right.
There is no one aspect ratio that'll
sure
fit everything.
In his home theater, Sylvester Stallone has a screen that goes...
Well, there's that. That is the third solution. Yes, exactly right.
Scott Wilkinson, ultimateavmag.com. You can email him, scott@techguylabs.com. We'll talk again next week.
You bet.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Scott Wilkinson does a home theater podcast. If you like home theater stuff, it's called Home Theater Geeks, and it's geeky, all right. You can watch it every Monday afternoon at 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern on our Twit podcast network. That's live, L-I-V-E dot Twit, T-W-I-T dot TV. No com, just dot TV. Live.twit.tv, 1:30 tomorrow. But you can also watch it after the fact because we record it, and you can download the audio and the video at twit.tv/HTG for Home Theater Geeks. Chris Conacher will be his guest. Actually, I'm really looking forward to this. He's with computeraudiophile.com, and Chris will talk about with Scott about getting high-fidelity audio out of your computer. Because, I mean, normally, you know, you when you listen to audio on your computer, you listen to audio, but it's not, you know, necessarily the best quality. It's not a super stereo system. And if you do something like I nuttily did, which is buy great speakers for your computer, you really need to pay attention to how you're generating the audio for those speakers. And that's what Chris will be talking about tomorrow. Scott also has a poll he wanted to mention at his website, ultimateavmag.com. which is related. Can digital audio ever be as good as analog? Or at least indistinguishable? See, analog audio, when you listen to a vinyl LP, does anybody remember those? Remember they used to make albums out of vinyl? And you put a needle on it, and it would shake the needle. The groove would shake the needle to create sound, and then it would come out of the speakers. That's called analog audio. And it's a pretty much direct reproduction of the waveforms that are coming into the microphones. You know, when I speak into a microphone right now, there's sound pressure. There's pressure waves coming out of my voice, created by my vocal cords, which moves the air in a certain way, and it hits a diaphragm, actually, in the microphone, which moves. And then electrically, not electronically, not digitally, but electrically, the movement of the diaphragm is recorded, in effect, sent down a wire. And if you're making a record, you record it on analog tape. Basically, you're recording magnetically the movement of that diaphragm in direct response to the pressure from my voice. And on the other end, you play back the vinyl record. It moves the needle in the same way as the pressure waves moved this diaphragm. And then electrically, it's sent to another diaphragm, which is a speaker, which is the other kind of analog to the diaphragm in the microphone. The speaker moves, creates those same pressure waves to your ear. Now, that's not a perfect process. In fact, if you listen to the first recordings, you know, Mary Had a Little Lamb, Thomas Edison recordings, the first gramophone, it was very scratchy and clicky and not very good, but they've gotten better and better at it, better microphones, better recording technologies, better speaker systems, and they could pretty accurately reproduce sound. You're listening to a pretty accurate reproduction right now. So that's analog sound. Now, of course, you're listening to something that's been digitally processed later because this radio show goes out via satellite. It's ultimately bits. And that's what happens on a CD, is this analog waveform that represents the pressure from your voice is sliced into what they call samples. You can't represent a smooth curve in a computer. It can't be done. It's a series of steps, and if you add enough steps, enough samples, it can look pretty smooth. In fact, it could be smooth enough that the ear maybe can't tell the difference. So the higher number of times you sample it, in the case of a CD, that's 44,100 times a second, and the higher the resolution of the data that you sample, in the case of a CD, that's 32,000 data points, from 0 to 32,000. That's a CD quality sound, but there's even higher quality sound. Now they're doing 96,000 samples a second and 24 bits or 2 billion different possibilities per sample. Is that as good as that smooth curve? So that's what Scott's asking you. And if you know, he actually describes this, and there's some pictures on his website, ultimateavmag.com, if you want to take the poll. I have to say, I know I can't distinguish it. Of course, I'm an old man. My ears aren't as good as I was when I was in my 20s. But the folks at the Dolby Labs, they have a beautiful reference sound room with the best possible speakers and the best possible, you know, the walls are specially treated and everything. And I was walking by the Dolby Labs in San Francisco a few years ago, and they said, "Hey, psst, Leo, come here." I'm not kidding. A guy said, "Come here, Leo." And he pulled me in. I said, "Yeah. Did I do something wrong?" He said, no, I want you to hear something. And they brought me into this special lab, and he said, now, I'm going to play a Steely Dan CD for you, and I'm going to play an MP3 for you, which is a much compressed version of the same song. And as I improve the quality of the compression on the MP3, I want you to tell me which is which. Now, when it was at 96,000 kilobits per second, 96 kilobits per second, I could tell the difference. But I said, well, that's the MP3. It doesn't sound as good. Oh, that's a CD. I could tell the difference. By the time he got to 128, I was pretty hard. I don't know if I was telling the difference. And when he got to 192 kilobits, that's a pretty high quality MP3, I couldn't tell the difference between a CD and the real thing. And I bet you if you did the same thing with a vinyl record and a CD, you probably wouldn't be able to tell the difference. But does that mean it's exactly the same, or is it just that you can't tell the difference? Do you know what I mean? It isn't exactly the same. And maybe There are some psychoacousticians, people who study this stuff, who say that you may not be able to tell the difference, but emotionally, this is weird, emotionally you can. that there's a feeling to the analog music that is somehow extracted in the digitization process. So you may say, well, I can't hear a difference, but somehow your brain knows, and it's emotionally not as effective. Certainly true when you're seeing a symphony in person. Or better yet, when you're standing, if you're lucky enough to get to do this, I got to do this once, standing in the middle of a symphony orchestra, there is absolutely a very different emotional feeling to the music than when you listen to it, even on a very high quality recording in a very high quality setting. So I may be true. So there's a difference between indistinguishable and the same. We're going to get back to the phones. It's a great question. And if you go to ultimateavmag.com, you can cast your vote on this poll. Can digital audio ever be indistinguishable from analog? Really interesting question. Paul's coming up in Silver Lake. He wants to get a stylus for his iPad. Is there such a thing? My wife discovered that she couldn't use her iPad with gloves on. I'll explain why and how you can get a stylus for the iPad. But first, I want to tell you about backing your data up. How important is that? You ought to know by now. If you've ever lost data, I don't have to explain it to you. So I'm just talking to the few who haven't ever had a disaster. Bad news. You will. You will. Hard drives die. Fire, flood, tornado, earthquake. Bad things happen. And if you don't have a backup copy of your data somewhere off-site, you're going to lose it. And that's, think of what's on that hard drive. Those precious pictures of your kid's birth, your wedding, the family dog panting in the back seat. The vacation trip pictures from this summer. It's all there. Your financial records. Your emails, all those great things, you got to back them up to get them back. And the best way to do it is something that's automatic and off-site. So if the worst happens, you've always got a safe copy up there on the internet. And that's how Carbonite works. So I want you to try it right now, free, PC or Mac. Go to Carbonite, CARBONITE.com. Use the offer code Leo, 2 weeks free. It just backs up whenever you're online automatically, so you don't have to think about it. And anytime you want to look at your data, you can. You just log on to your Carbonite account on any computer, even on a smartphone or an iPad, and there's your stuff. So it's storage in the cloud, too. Now, after you have tried it, if you decide to buy, I want you to use my name, Leo, again. You'll get 14 months for the price of 12, just $59 a year. Less 15 cents a day for unlimited backup of all the personal stuff on your internal drive. That is a great deal. Carbonite, you got to back it up to get it back, so do it right. With Carbonite.com, Paul on the line. Leo Laporte, the tech guy from Silver Lake, California. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. Welcome to the show.
I'm a big fan, long-time watcher, listener, first-time caller. A little nervous.
Don't be nervous. It's just us kids.
Yeah, yeah. So listen, you know, I haven't bought an iPad yet. I helped a friend buy one.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to use it for drawing. I use a Wacom with my MacBook Pro.
Right.
I'd like to have like a little tablet to, you know, draw stuff around. I just did the Create Space thing with the children's book. I drew it and I put it up there.
Oh, that's great. What's the name of your children's book?
It's called Under the Covers.
I love
it. You can see it at PaulieCastellaneta.com. It's about a little kid who hears a noise, goes under the covers, and gets transported to a magical land.
Oh.
And so, you know,
so you're an art. Are you a trained artist, or just you just love doing it?
You know, I just love doing it. I took some art classes in college, and I actually made a couple of independent movies.
Well, we're going to take a break. News is at the top of the hour. When we come back, I'll explain why the iPad is not like a tablet and what you can do about it.
Okay.
First a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and anything else with a chip in it. The digital stuff that's making you crazy. iPads. Get a lot of iPad questions these days. Phone number 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. That's easier to remember, 8888-ASK-LEO. But there's also a website that has all of this information, everything, you know, where the chat room is, what the phone number is, audio and video, the downloads from previous shows, all of that stuff. And that's all at, ready? TechGuyLabs.com. Get out your quill pen. Write this down. Tech Guy. Somebody yesterday, Gary was in the studio, gave me a crystal quill pen. Tech Guy. So I'll write it down. Let's see. TechGuyLabs.com. Now I have ink all over my hands. The last caller before we took a break is so cool. He's an artist. He did a children's book. He's an illustrator. And he wants to use the iPad for drawing. And in fact, there's some great drawing programs out there for the iPad. Brushes, ArtRage, a whole bunch of them. Probably a half dozen really good drawing programs. But the iPad is a little different than what you might be used to if you've used a Wacom tablet or some other tablet on your computer. The Wacom tablets are pressure sensitive. So when you push the stylus down harder, you get a fatter line, a deeper color. It changes what you're drawing. Just as, if you have a crayon and you crayon lightly on a real paper, piece of paper, it's light. And if you press harder, it's thicker and darker. Same thing on these Wacom tablets. The iPad is not pressure sensitive. It's either you're either touching it or not. However, there have been some very interesting hacks with styluses to give simulated pressure sensitivity. And most of these good programs, in fact, will give you a broader line if you press down, a thinner line if you don't. They will actually change. And to understand how this works and which stylus you should get, you have to understand why the iPad touchscreen is different than what you might be used to. It's a capacitive touchscreen. My wife discovered this the other day. She was wearing gloves, and she couldn't use the iPad. She couldn't use her iPhone either. And she said, what the? I said, well, darling, try this sausage. And it worked fine. I said, how about this mozzarella stick? No problem. I said, what's the difference? A little science question for you. Well, it's capacitive. It means it needs a conductive surface to touch it. Your skin is good. A sausage works. Mozzarella cheese, I've tried it, works. Leaves kind of a streak on the screen, but it does work. In fact, they even make special gloves that will conduct with conductive material, silver or gold material in the tip, that will conduct the capacitance through your finger into the glove, through the glove into the iPad, and they work. But that now you can see why you can't just use, and you might have tried this, a pen or a regular, Wacom stylus on your iPad. It doesn't do anything. It needs to be conductive. So there are a number of companies. The first one I became aware of was called the Pogo Stylus from 10-1 Design. I think they were the first company to do this. And if you've ever seen one, it looks like it's got a little puff ball, a little cheerleader's pom-pom at the end of it. What it is, it's an aluminum stylus. It's metal. It conducts the electrical current from your hand into this pom-pom, which is also conductive. And then you can use it to draw. Now, the advantage of the pom-pom is if you press it harder, more of the little brush ends come in contact. The iPad can sense that. So one brush end, it says you're not pressing hard. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, it gives you levels of simulated pressure. And so that's how they do that. I've also played with something called the Alum Pen or Alu Pen. It's made out of aluminum. Bamboo makes a stylus. I'm going to put a link in the show notes. Macworld magazine last month reviewed 12 styluses that work with the iPad. There are quite a few of them. I've owned several of them. You'll find that they don't really simulate the Wacom stylus very well. You're missing some of the capabilities. So if you're used to using a true tablet, drawing on the iPad might be a little frustrating. They tend to be thicker. They're not as pointed. You don't get the pressure sensitivity that you get with a real tablet. The Wacom Bamboo Stylus is pretty good. It's a little thinner. It's not as thick as the other ones. Still has kind of a rubber tip on it that's a little fat. But it gives you some little bit more control. So anyway, there's a bunch of companies that make these. Maybe I've seen them use them at the Apple Store. I think they use the Pogo at the Apple Store. But there's a whole list here, and I'll give you the list. The good news is they're not expensive. They're $10, $15, $20. I have one, and I never use it. I just use it the tip of my finger. It's probably as good as anything else. But I will put the link in the show notes, techguylabs.com. It was in last month's Macworld magazine, Drawing on the iPad, 12 Touchscreen Styluses. Reviewed. Back to the phones we go in Anaheim. Fred's been hanging on for a while. Thanks for your patience, Fred. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I've got a question about domain names. A few years ago, I registered a domain name for my personal web page based on my name, and I've got a little, had a little problem, and that is that my last name, no one can spell. No one is going to be able to remember fredvecinius.com. No one will be able to find it because you can't spell my last name.
Right.
So I found a solution. I registered another page that just involved my first name, and can I say the website?
Yeah.
Fredspage.com. Now,
that's a good name.
Yeah.
When did you get that? Recently?
I got that about a year and a half ago.
Wow, you were lucky, because all the good, you know, there's actually a domain, all the good domain names are taken.com.
Yeah, I thought I was...
Fredspage.com, wow, I'm impressed. That's pretty good.
Okay, well, my question is, you know, right now, Fred's page just forwards to fredvecinius.com.
Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed how to spell Vecinius. Now that I'm looking at your Fred's page, it's a lot easier.
Right, yeah.
This is but unique. So you're a science teacher, or...?
Mechanical engineer looking for work. And
hint, hint.
Yes, you bet.
Go to fredspage.com if you're looking for somebody who's really brilliant. This is neat. This is really neat. So you're helping, I like this. I mean, making a page for people who are interested in this stuff, that's great. I love it.
Uh-huh. Well, that's my personal web page. I've got ideas about something that's maybe a little bigger, but that's another, that would be a topic for another call.
Good. All right.
So my question is that, I was sort of thinking, you know, should I be looking ahead that maybe one day someone might want to buy this, you know, rather than starting to have my email based on that TLD and a top-level domain?
So what you're saying is if somebody came along and offered you six figures for fredspage.com, as attached as you are to it, you'd just have to let it go.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I don't expect that much.
Oh, you'd sell it for $50?
No, no.
You haven't had it work for a while. No, yeah, I understand what you're saying. I mean, here's the thing. There are some, you know, sex.com sold for millions of dollars. Actually, the person who bought it defaulted because, it, you know, truth is it isn't worth millions of dollars. And I think that what people are realizing is if you owned McDonald's.com or even BigMac.com, yeah, there'd be some value to that. You could sell it to a corporation. It's their trademark. The truth is you might not even get to sell it because... they could go to the domain registry and say, hey, we have the trademark, and they could take it from you. That's actually what happened with McDonald's.com.
Uh-huh.
Fredspage.com, you know, nobody can trademark that, but is it going to be, how much is that going to be worth to somebody? Probably not a lot, unless, you know, some guy named Fred wins American Idol. It seems unlikely.
Well, I was thinking if someone named Fred runs for president, that might
be. Maybe, but you notice we're kind of solving this problem. You know, they'll say fredforpresident.com or fred2012.com. You know, they'll figure out a way to make it work. There's no, what I'm saying is there's no domain name so valuable that you can't get around it.
So I probably should just hang on to it and make it my own personal.
That's what I would do. You got a great name, keep it. Nobody's going to offer you more than $50. Leo Laborde, the tech guy. Leo Laborde. The Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Chatting with we have an open studio policy because we live in the studio is in the middle of nowhere. So I figure if you make your way here, you're probably safe, right? It's not like it's in a big city. And we get visitors from all over. We've got Brad and Casey in studio from Eugene, Oregon, and Matt and Amy from Chicago. But Casey is a teacher, a third grade teacher who has a great blog. Can I say your blog on the blogger.com? It's When Tech Met Ed. When-tech-met-ed.blogspot.com. And, you know, we were talking about technology and education, and it's a very interesting challenge because, well, obviously our kids today are growing up in a world where technology is everywhere, and they need to be technically literate to even get a job these days, at least a good job. It's still very challenging to incorporate technology into schools. And, you know, there's nothing that can replace the one-on-one with a great teacher and a student. No computer program can do that. And yet, I think you can use technology effectively in schools, but it's a challenge. So I think this looks like I'm going to read more of this site when Tech Met Ed at blogspot.com. It's nice to meet you, Casey. Thanks for stopping by. Yeah, very, you know, I deal with this a little bit because... I'm on the board of our local high school, but also people ask me foolish people ask me what I think. A lot of teachers. I talk to a lot of teachers. And I don't know if there's an obvious answer. We're talking off the air about the fact that many schools, high schools, filter internet access to the school. You can't get to Facebook. I was just at the high school that I'm on the board of, and I was shocked because I couldn't get on Facebook, Twitter, or even YouTube. Now, I understand it's a problem. Kids are sitting there watching YouTube videos instead of doing their homework. But I don't. Does it do any good to filter it? Don't they all have smartphones? Can't they watch those videos anyway? And don't you think the real opportunity here is to teach kids how to live in a world where there are distractions like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and still be, you know, functional, still be effective, still use those tools and know when to close the laptop and get to work? I think that's the opportunity to teach kids that. When you block it, you're kind of missing the boat. And believe me, kids need to use Facebook. My daughter and I have been going back and forth on this. She's a college student. And she says, I want to delete my Facebook page. And I said, well, you should. It's good. You don't need Facebook. But that's the only way I can keep in touch with my friends. Well, then you should probably keep your Facebook. But I want to delete my Facebook. It's a challenge, isn't it? Nobody exchanges phone numbers anymore. In that generation, it's Facebook or nothing. Samuel, South Bend, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Samuel.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Very good. Welcome to the show.
Good. Glad to be on here with you. And nice laptop you're looking at. You deserve
it. You saw my steampunk laptop, huh?
Yeah. I got a question about AT adding an N router to an AT&T U-verse gateway.
Does the U-verse gateway, is it a router itself?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and forgive me for not knowing. I just don't have U-verse. So when you get U-verse, U-verse is AT&T's television service plus internet service. You get it's a DSL modem, just between us kids, I think. It's basically a DSL modem.
And it serves my telephone service and everything.
Right. And in there, is it a wireless router or is it a wired router?
Both.
Okay. So you want to add another router because you want to extend its reach?
Because I want to speed it up the end speed and gigabit router.
So they don't give you an N router. They give you an old slow router. Or why I should say Wi-Fi access point. Yeah, you can do that. So what you'll do is you'll connect your N router to the AT&T router via an Ethernet cable. That's so that you get the full speed off the AT&T router. And then what I would suggest is that you let the AT&T router do what's called the DHCP. That's the NAT. That's the stuff that the router does to all the computers in your house. It says your number is 192.168.1.10. You're 192.168.1.11. It assigns the IP addresses to all of the computers. That's called Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol, or DHCP. So it's assigning those numbers out. You don't want it to do it and then your Wi-Fi router to do it again. That would be bad. So you're going to put your Wi-Fi router into something called bridge mode. What it says is, let the AT&T thing do all the work. I'm just going to sit here and turn and be a wireless transmitter. All of the settings will still be in the U-verse router. That's probably what you want to do. You don't want to mess with that. But you will get the benefits of N by letting the N wireless router bridge. Now, Terry in our chat room says, if you want, you can get the AT&T installer guy or gal to put your U-verse router in bridge mode. They do that for the same reason. They say, well, you want to use a fancier router yourself. Okay, we'll just make our router basically a dumb DSL modem and you can do all the work. But since you already have it installed and it's working and everything's fine, I would just, go out and get an inexpensive Linksys or D-Link or Netgear. I happen to like D-Link. Wi-Fi access spot, and just put it in bridge mode, and everything should be all right. Now, you're not going to be any faster than U-verse is, but at least you won't be hobbled by a slower Wi-Fi router. Pretty easy to do. John in Los Angeles, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John. Hello, John.
Hi, Leo. Sorry, I had the mute button pressed.
That's okay. I do that all the time. I talk and talk, and nobody sees it. Here's the thing.
Right, exactly. I'm calling with a question about making video calls.
Okay.
And I'd like to set my grandmother up so she can use her TV and see her great-grandchildren through her TV. And I found a couple of things like a Cisco Yumi or
Yeah,
Umi.
The Yumi, though, is really expensive, and there's a monthly fee.
Exactly. And what's the monthly fee for?
Nothing. you know, we bought a Yumi to review it, and it's like, please. It's like $300 or $400, right?
I understand that the hardware is $600, and then it's $25
yes.
a month, so $300 a year.
What is Cisco thinking?
And you're still paying your internet service provider for the,
yes.
for the connection.
Yes.
That's all you need for
there
monthly.
Are a number of companies that make Skype. In fact, there's some TV manufacturers that actually build Skype into the TV. Skype is free. Skype is great. Skype works. I hope Microsoft doesn't mess it up, but at least for now, Skype's a great choice. And you just look, there are a number of cameras that are designed to mount on the TV. They have good, what they call array microphones in there so that grandma can sit a little bit farther back on the you know, she's going to sound like she's in a kind of a big room, but you'll be able to hear her. And the picture will go on the screen, and grandma will be happy, and you'll be happy, and it won't cost a penny after you buy the hardware, and the hardware itself is not very expensive.
Right. So, now I understand, like, there's Xbox 360 Kinect, I think, and it has a...
You can't use Kinect. You that doesn't have a good enough camera in it.
Oh.
So there are a number of companies. I'll tell you what, we need to take a break. Just keep listening on the air. I'll give you 3 or 4 recommendations for relatively inexpensive cameras you can hook up to your TV for grandma. She does need internet access, and then she'll be able to do it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is Earth, Wind, and Fire Day today. It's that guy's show. Is it because I was singing in a high-pitched voice you did this guy? This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by Carbonite.com. If I do a moonwalk, will you play some Michael Jackson? Carbonite's backup done right. I want you to try it free for 15 days. Just go to Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Leo. If you decide to buy 2 free months when you use my name, Leo. Carbonite. You got to back it up to get it back, so do it right with Carbonite. So Grandma wants a Skype on her TV. Now, there are Panasonic and Sony and Vizio and Samsung have all announced that they're going to make TV sets that have Skype built into them. And then you can buy for around $100 to $150. You could buy a camera that sits on this is so cool. Sits on top of the TV. And you can essentially, you don't need a computer now. You don't need anything else. You could just make a Skype call on your television set. The reason of that for that is that most HDTVs now are actually computers. They have CPUs, they have memory, they have software, and so it's just a a small detail to add Skype into that software and let you do that. Now they do have a special camera that they put on the TV, and the difference between that and a Skype camera that you might have on your laptop is it's designed to focus a little bit more on the room. Probably it's a little bit telephoto or it has the ability to zoom in a little bit so a person could sit 10 or 15 feet away and it doesn't look like a little pinpoint on the camera. And then it has a special microphone, an array microphone that is designed to pick up audio, again, 10 or 15 feet away. So Logitech makes one just like this. It's $150. It's their TV cam. But unfortunately, these cameras are designed, they have a USB connector, but they're really designed for a television that has Skype in it. If you don't have a TV, yeah, see, this 78-degree wide-angle lens, so people see more of the room. So it's not telephoto. That gives them kind of a view of the whole room. That's interesting. Autofocus, what they call ultra-wideband audio, dual microphones that are kind of unidirectional. So they're aimed at the person sitting, at the couch 10 feet away. And so I think this is a great solution, but the problem is, what if Grandma doesn't have a Skype-enabled TV? Well, in fact, if Grandma didn't get a TV in the last few months, she probably doesn't. Some new Blu-ray players, by the way, have it. If Grandma's got an HD TV but doesn't have a Blu-ray player, now we're talking. You can get the Panasonic 110, for instance, a 3D Blu-ray player that has Skype built into it. So that would be another way to do this. Otherwise, if grandma has broadband internet, she must have a computer. It might be the easiest thing to do might be just to put Skype, a free program, on the laptop. Laptop probably already has a camera, and just use that. If not, again, I like Logitech the best for webcams. They make very good, high-quality, high-def webcams now that are not very expensive. The C910 or the C510, just beautiful. The C510 is probably all you need. It's about $60 or $70. The C910, it's about $100 list, which means you could probably get it for less. And it does high-def 1080p video. Not for calling, just recording, 720p for calling. But that's good. I mean, you can make a high-def call nowadays. This 910 is what we use for our hosts who are not on my podcast network, who are not in studio, and it just looks great. So the problem is, does Grandma have a computer or a Skype-enabled TV? I think now the Yumi doesn't look so expensive. Yeah, $600, but it's basically a computer with a camera. I just don't like the $25 a month service fee. There's no reason for that. And the Yumi, by the way, and this is important, the Cisco Yumi is not better quality. If you have a good broadband connection and one of these great high-def cameras, you're going to get spectacular quality, much as good as anything that the Yumi can do. So you're right. I don't know why Cisco wants $25 for that. But if Grandma already has a computer, simple enough. If she doesn't, then I would look at one of these Blu-ray players that has Skype capability. Get that. That's going to only be a few $100. Get the camera, about $100, $150 if you get the Logitech, and you're ready to go. And no monthly fee. And Skype's great. You will probably, want to go in, set it up, show her how to use it. But it's, truthfully, if all she's doing is calling you to see the grandkids, you could make it that she presses one button that just does it. Call the grandkids. Tyler Cranbrook, British Columbia. Hey, Tyler, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I have a question, and it has to do with the best cable to connect from a computer to an LCD TV.
Yeah, I mean, it's really going to come down to what your computer is capable of. I'll give you the connections to a TV from worst to best. The worst connection is that composite, that yellow cable with the red and white audio cables. That's called composite. That's the worst. It's analog, and it's pretty low quality. Next best is S-Video. Next one after that, now we're getting into high-def territory. It's still analog, but it's high-def is component. Those are three connectors. There's like green. I can't remember
right.
What colors are. Green, yellow, and red. And then the best of all is HDMI. That's pure digital from the computer to the TV. The TV's probably digital if it's a modern TV, and so that's going to give you the best quality.
Yeah, it is modern. It's less...
But the question is, what is your computer output? There are computers that have HDMI. If your computer has HDMI, you're done.
Yeah, this one doesn't have HDMI.
What a surprise.
it just has the component out, VGA and DVI.
All right, so you have two choices. Component actually is going to give you a very good result. Component is analog, but it's good quality, high-def analog. If you want, and your TV will have component in, so you just need to get an inexpensive component cable. If you want to go digital, that DVI is the same signal, that DVI connector is the same signal as HDMI. So video is very easy. You can buy an inexpensive DVI to HDMI adapter and then plug your TV into that. But guess what? You're not getting audio because the audio is not
right.
Coming out of DVI. So now you have to get an additional connector, and this is where it gets a little bit complicated. If you want to continue to use HDMI, there are adapters. They're not cheap. Geffen, G-E-F-E-N, sells an adapter that takes the analog audio from your computer or the DVI video, mushes it into HDMI audio and video, and then goes to your TV. But that's going to cost you some money. There's also, it's possible on some TVs to hook the audio up separately. If you have an AV receiver, this should be pretty straightforward. But TVs, it's a little more complicated because a lot of times if you're giving them HDMI, that the audio is coming with the video. So the simplest, to be honest, Tyler, the one that's least likely to cause sync problems, the one that's going to cost you less in cables and connectors is component. If you've got, you're lucky, you've got component coming out of your computer, just hook the component cable up to the TV, hook the analog audio coming out of the computer to the analog in for the component input. That you'll, they, the component input will have an audio input as well, because component doesn't support audio, and you're done, and you won't have sync issues. You'll get a good HD signal, probably as good as you would get if you got the VGA. Now, some TVs also have VGA in, and some may even have DVI in. That would make it simpler. You can just connect a computer. It's as if it's a computer monitor. You just connect it up. You still have to get that audio in. So there are a lot of different ways to do this. My favorite cable place for the complicated adapters, Geffen often has stuff nobody else makes, GEFEN.com. And for the less complicated, simpler cables, the HDMI cables and so forth, there's nobody better than monoprice.com, MonoPrice.com. Don't spend $100 on an HDMI cable. That's crazy. That's crazy talk. Monoprice will sell it to you for $4. Same cable. Thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Talking about all sorts of stuff. Now, I'm sorry. Somebody in the chat room, I don't remember your name, sent me the link to this on Amazon. This is the Asus Video Phone. I forgot there are actually quite a few standalone Skype phones. This is perfect for grandma because it is a Skype phone. You don't need a computer. You just need an internet connection and a photo frame. So you could send pictures to it. Asus makes this. When grandma wants to call, she can just press a button. It's like, it's compact. It's like a phone. It's not as big as her wide, you know, big screen TV. But it's only $189 on Amazon. So that's the Asus, A-S-U-S, Video Phone Photo, SV1 TPS. And it's a 7-inch screen, 800 by 480. So it's not super huge. If grandma really is set on having that big screen experience, this might not be perfect for her. But boy, it's, the price is right and it's easy. And I think there are other companies that make something similar. Dr. Mom has one. She says she likes it. She's used that actually to call our show before. Roy, Orange, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Roy.
I pushed Roy's button.
Hello, Roy. Don't be shy. Oh, he came. He came back. Yes, Roy. You're on.
Is it me?
I heard him say hello. I'm going to put Roy on hold because I think he's probably having, you know, some sort of problem with his phone. Maybe that's why he's calling me. Brad in Santa Cruz, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brad.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
So I work with I help a nonprofit. And we're moving from a kind of a classroom-based training program to a distance learning program that we developed. And we want to pilot this to people out on the web, make it available, but we want to make sure that we protect the copyright and also track, you know, how people, the uptake and how people use it. And I'm wondering if you have a recommendation on terms of sites that might be appropriate for that.
So you want to post it online?
Correct. We want to post some training programs online. They're video-based.
You can't protect the copyright.
And we want to make sure that people can't just download them.
They can. You cannot protect the copyright.
Yeah.
That's what happens. You post it online, it's out there.
Okay. So there's no way.
No, because look, if I can look at it on a screen, worst case, I'll take a video camera and take a picture of it.
That's true. You obviously have poor quality, but yes.
Well, not necessarily. It might be pretty good quality, but that's just one of many ways. This is okay. What the movie industry is learning. If you put it online, it can be taken from you. Which is why my suggestion is to not worry about copyright. I know you want to hold on to your precious goods, but the problem is, you've got a choice. You can distribute it widely and not hold on to it, or you can kind of be miserly and say, nope, nobody can have this. I'm going to send you a special copy-protected disc. That's what a DVD or a Blu-ray disc is. And of course, the problem with DVD is that can be copied, too. It's copyrighted, copied easily, too. So let's make it a Blu-ray disc. Now, at great cost and expense to you, you're going to make a copy-protected disc that nobody can copy. And people are going to have to pay for that because it's not cheap to make. So you're really narrowing your potential audience down by probably factors of thousands. You know, not instead of a million people, it's going to be 100 people. It's a lot. Now I understand you got to make a living, and this is premium content that you spend a lot of money making. So you got to think of ways to encourage people to pay for it or to treat it like it's valuable, and then still be able to put it out there. And there's lots of ways to do that, but don't look for a technological solution. It's not copy protection. All of the solutions are social. Giving it additional value, making people feel good about buying it, making them feel bad about stealing it, that kind of thing.
Okay.
They really can't protect. If you put it online, which is good because more people can see it, it can be stolen.
Okay, good enough. Quick question about carbonate, if I may.
Yes.
So I went to the website, and it looks like it only backs up user data. If your system crashes, you have to have a restore disk, correct?
No.
No.
If you want to restore it, you log. So, okay, so I crash. Let's say the worst happened. My house burned down. I buy a new computer. I log into my Carbonite account. At that point, it downloads the Carbonite software and starts restoring.
But I'm saying it's not going to restore the system files.
Oh, no. But you don't want it to. No, you don't really want a backup to do that. If you want that, then what you want to do is make an image of your system.
Correct, and I've done that. I just want to check to make sure that. So it doesn't.
There are two different kinds of backups. See, the image, it gets out of date right away, because there's updates, there's new apps. It's and if you create a document, it's not on the image. So it's good to have an image. I mean, it's a restore disk basically. It's good to make those from time to time, but that's not your data backup. Your data backup needs to be running continuously in the background so that when you create a file, you write something, it's backed up.
Right.
So there's two different things, basically, both of which are part of, and I should be very clear, Carbonite is not the end all and be all for your backup. You've got to back up your apps, you've got to back up your operating system. You know, if you have the original disks, that's good enough for most people. Carbonite's designed so that when you get a new computer, because your old one got stolen or burned down, you put it back. Or nothing's wrong with your computer, but you accidentally threw out a file, you get it back, that kind of thing.
Okay,
thanks,
thank
bud.
You.
Appreciate it. Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about the whole issue of copyright, because it's not an easy thing, and I understand completely. I create content. I understand completely the issue, but let's talk a little bit about the idea of holding on with a tight grip, because I don't think you can do it. Before we do, though, let me talk about Carbonite. Why not? Carbonite Backup. Now, we've talked about this before. It's an online backup solution. So how does it work? You go to Carbonite.com. You can actually try it free. We like to do that to give you a sense of what Carbonite is. You go to Carbonite.com, use my name, Leo, and you can try this free for 2 weeks. Now, as soon as you install it, Mac or PC, it starts using your internet connection to back up files. All the personal files in your internal drive, not your operating system, not your apps. Truthfully, you don't want to waste all your bandwidth doing that. In fact, you might not even want to back up videos or the biggest files of all. Back up the stuff you can't replace. That's what you want to back up. And then whenever you need it, you can go and look at it. It's online. You can log in with another computer. There's your data. You can log in with your smartphone or your iPad. There's your data. You can access it. You don't really need the Carbonite software. You can get to that data anytime. But if the worst happens, yes, you could fully restore. Now, here's the deal. $59 a year for all. They don't ask you how much data for all the data on your internal drive. So you don't have to worry. Oh, is this too much? No, whatever's on your internal drive, that's what you can back up. That's 15 cents a day. And by the way, if you decide you want to buy it, you're going to try it with Leo, the offer code Leo. If you decide you want to buy, use my name Leo again. You'll get 14 months of the price of 12, so it's an even better deal. I just think this is exactly the kind of backup you need. If you've got a laptop, if you've got a desktop, you need Carbonite. Carbonite.com, offer code Leo. But every backup, you know, I think it's still a good idea to have an external hard drive backup onto that. It's a good idea to use something so that, you know, if you have multiple computers, something like Dropbox, where all the stuff is kept on all the computers. I like that stuff, or iCloud. But that's not the only part of your backup strategy. You got to have a full backup somewhere else as well. Offsite, that's the key. Let's see. Oh, I was going to talk a little bit about copyright. We'll do that again, then we'll get to more calls in just a little bit. This is a big problem. Music industry, book publishers, movie industry, even newspapers. They're all worried about the fact that their stuff is online, and that means it can get stolen. So I guess you just have to say, yes, that's the case. And if you're uncomfortable with that, don't put it online. But there's no way to protect it. And usually what happens when you try to protect it, you merely inconvenience and annoy your honest customers, because it's the dishonest ones that know immediately how to copy it. It's the honest people who go, oh, it's copy protected. I can't put it on my iPhone. I don't know. It slows honest people down. It doesn't slow the thieves down. So don't worry about copy protection. What you want to do is create a culture, a community that supports you. Many musicians have figured this out. If your fans love you, they're going to pay for your record. It's happened again and again. Radiohead gave away the record, but said, if you want to pay us, pay us. They made a lot of money. Number of bands have done this. So it is possible to do that. I think that's where we go in the future, is you create a culture that says, we want to support you. We care. We want to make sure that you make enough money to continue to make this music or these movies or this stuff that we really love. But if it's on the internet, it's going to be very hard to hold on to it. The good news is most people are honest. What a surprise. The website, techguylabs.com. If you want to know more, I've got links to everything we've talked about, our audio and video too. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, hello there. How are you? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, anything with a chip in it. My phone number, 8888. Ask Leo if you want to talk about that stuff. I'm here to talk about it with you. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Outside the U.S., you just call via Skype. And we'll be glad to take that call and put you on the air. And it won't be expensive. I think, in fact, it will be free, as my understanding, if you Skype out to call a toll-free number in the U.S. Let's see here. Who's been holding on the longest? Looks like, now, is it Jeff in San Jose? Yeah, I think Jeff in San Jose, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, hi, Leo. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. I am trying to do an upgrade to my AV system that presently at the heart of the system, I have an Onkyo 750-watt AV receiver with HDMI inputs, etc.
Good choice.
What I'd like to be able to do now is to wirelessly connect the system from a tablet. So my first question is there a difference between like an iPad and a Zoom? Secondly, I'd like to then use one of the cloud services, whether it's iTunes or this new Google Music Beta. Third, I'd like to then connect it to the receiver and don't know if I should use Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. And then fourth, what device would I need to link up to my AV receiver to make all that work?
Let me ask this couple of questions. First of all, where is the content coming from?
What I'd like to do is have the content come from the tablet.
Good. Okay. Then we can solve this easily. If you want to go the other direction, you know, play a Blu-ray movie on your Blu-ray player and have it show up on the tablet, that's tough. What you want to do, easy. Apple makes it very easy with the iPad with something they call AirPlay.
Okay.
So in order to do that, you'll need an Apple TV. They're at $99.
Okay.
And there may be some Apple TV stuff coming soon. We're not sure, but there have been some rumors about Apple TV updates and so forth. Even maybe iCloud attached to Apple TV, that kind of thing. But right now what Apple TV does, just by itself, Netflix, iTunes, I think that's it. Does it do anything else? I think it's just Netflix and iTunes. But AirShare is the other thing. And so if you have on your iPad content, or you have an application that supports AirShare, by the way, not all do, then you can select the AirShare playback icon. It works on the iTunes player. Let's use that as an example on the iPad. If it sees an Apple TV, it'll add Apple TV to the list of places it can play that content. You select it, and you sit back, and it's on your big screen TV via AirPlay. Now, next fall, when iOS 5 comes out, you won't even have to worry because everything that's on your iPad will be able to go through your TVs.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. And for the AV receiver itself, does the Apple TV plug into?
Yes. So the Apple TV has HDMI out. It'll go into one of your HDMI ports on the Onkyo.
Oh, terrific.
And it'll be one of your inputs. So you'll just go, you know, use remote control, go to input 7, HDMI 6, whatever it is, and there it is on your TV, audio and video.
Wow.
Yeah, Apple really solved this. They made it so much easier.
Because I've been going around and I've been talking to people in AV stores, and I've come out more confused than each time that I go into one. No one kind of just deciphered it the way you did. That's why it's worth hanging on and making the phone call. I greatly appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for your patience, Jeff.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I was thinking of getting a job at Good Guys, but I decided to do the radio show instead. I think AirPlay is, in the long run, Apple's going to put a lot of energy and resources behind it, and it's going to get more and more capable. And as you can see, it really solves a problem, doesn't it? Hey, we got Roy back from Orange County. Let's see if I can hear him this time. Hi, Roy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, hi. I'm sorry. I had the stream on with the phone.
Oh, so you were listening to my audio via the internet, and that meant that you answered my question like a minute later.
I'm trying out a magic jack, and it actually is working pretty well.
It is. It is.
Compared to Skype, which, you know, is like up to 2.5 cents a minute now. So, but that's not why I called. Our replay machinery, all of us who still use the old replay DVRs, is losing support service in July.
This is not a very good ad for Magic Jack, I might add. He's using Magic Jack is a USB thing that plugs into the laptop and uses your internet access to make phone calls, and it's cutting in and out. Yeah, I think Replay, are they, yeah, I guess you could still buy a Replay device, but I think the reason that they're losing the guides is because Replay as a company is kind of bye-bye. They are going to eliminate on July 31st their electronic programming guide service. So you have a DVR, that'll continue to work, but you don't have an interactive program guide. So you won't have any way to kind of go through the guide and say, record this. Now, the upside is they're not going to bill you for it anymore. Essentially, Replay as a company kind of got put out of existence by lawsuits. Let's be honest. The movie industry didn't like it. Replay TV, unlike TiVo, had a 30-second skip feature in it. And you could, on the remote control, skip commercials. That was all they needed to hear, but the networks just basically, you know, put them out of existence. So Replay as a company, I guess they're still around. I don't know. I wouldn't recommend. They say the industry conversion to HDTV is complete and Replay TV DVRs are unable to take advantage of the wealth of HDTV programming, and that's why they're going out of business. No. They didn't update it because, the networks didn't like them because they had commercial skip. So, Roy, what you want to do, Roy, is get a TiVo, or you could go to your cable company. The cable DVRs are not that good. In fact, I understand why you like Replay. Replay was a great device, but they're not around. So, go out and get a TiVo, and TiVo's still around, and it will do a lot of the same things, including, by the way, if you know how to hack it, the 30-second skip. Francis, Pittsburgh. Is it PA or California? Hi, Francis. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
PA or California?
PA.
All right. Nice to meet you. What can I do for you?
Thanks for taking my call. Well, Leo, I worked in advertising all my life, you know, and got laid off a couple of years ago.
turn down your radio or your internet because something's coming back at me, and I think it's confusing you, yeah.
Yeah, it's a tech cartoon. and it's online.
What's the URL for it?
Yeah, it's geek2me.com.
So is the word it's in it or just geek to me?
Yeah, it's just geek to me.
Just geek and the number 2me.com. That's a good URL, easy to remember. And yeah. And do you draw the? Oh, look at this. And you do computer repairs?
Yeah. No, not this one.
Okay. I thought it was a good URL. What is the? What is it?
Yeah, geek dash the number 2 dash.
I left the dashes out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So somebody else got the geek to me without the dashes. Geek dash 2.me. Is this it? Laugh out loud tech cartoons about computers. And do you do these yourself, Francis?
Yeah, I build the website. I do the comic strips. I write them.
This is
great. Because I'm a freelance creative director now, so I have some time on the side. And just recently, I converted it into an iPhone app. It's available in the iTunes store. So the question for you, Leo, is how do I promote this strip?
Besides coming on the radio show, which is what a lot of people do. No, it's an interesting question. I mean, I think the best way to promote it is to build an audience that promotes it for you. But we'll talk a little bit about that idea in a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, we were talking with Francis in Pittsburgh, PA. He has an online comic site, geek-2-me.com. And he wanted to promote it. Now, we looked at a couple of the comics, Francis, and verdict of the chat room was, to be blunt, it's not funny. So, you know, I like the design of the site. I think that one of the issues with the design of the site is it's a lot of Flash. Now, the problem with putting Flash on a website is you're eliminating people on the iPad and the iPhone, which is a big majority of mobile viewers. Now, you've kind of solved that by creating an iPad and iPhone app, which you give away for free, which is great. I have to say, I don't think that the user interface is so great that you need Flash. I would redo that in a fashion that you could play this without an app on the iPad. Now, this is the issue, isn't it? It's kind of the issue of one of our callers earlier who wanted to copy protect his videos on the internet. Really, my attitude is you want to grow? Give it as many people as possible a chance to see it. And so by making this site work everywhere, you're going to have a better chance of getting an audience. I would work maybe a little bit on the content too. It's got to be funny. But here's my belief, and it's a firm belief. It's not for me, but maybe it is for somebody. And here's my belief, firm belief. If you have great content, you will get discovered. It might not happen right away. It might take a little time. You might have to do some plugging on your own, calling me and saying, hey, look at my site, or going to places where people who read geek comics would go and talking about it, participating in the greater internet anyway. I think that's always important. If you're active and you're out there and people do go to your site and say, hey, this is hysterical, believe me, they'll pass it around. It will take off on its own. In the long run. I mean, even stuff like Rebecca Black's Friday took off. And that, so, it's hard to create a viral video, but I think in the long run, if your quality of your content is good, and you do the things to expose it to some people, it will grow. There's a book, I think it was a book, that had the thesis that all you really need to go viral, to take off, is two things. Good content and 1,000 fans. Just 1,000. So make this your goal, Francis. 1,000 fans. And if you get to those 1,000 fans, that's enough. That's critical mass. That's enough people to spread the word that it will go from there and take off. You know, and keep doing it. You love it, keep doing it. Don't worry about whether I like it or anybody likes it. Don't even worry about whether you get a big audience. Do it because you love it. That's what I tell people who do podcasts, blogs, cartoons on the internet. Do it because you love it. And that is a satisfaction of its own, you know. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Lucia in Los Angeles. Hi, Lucia.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Do you like Lucia? Is that how you like me to say it, or Lucia?
I'm Lucia.
Lucia.
Yes, I'm listening to you every week, but I never call.
Well, I'm glad you called today.
I have a question. I have, I'm a dancer. I have a lot of videos from all over the world. As I have all, like, videotapes, over, like, 100.
Wow.
And I'd like to put them on a hard drive, just on a, like, to convert it to the data.
Right.
So you have it in one hard drive because videos, you cannot transport them.
Well, not only that, they're going to wear out. They're videotapes with actual tape, moving tape.
Well, I just want just everything what's in the videos, I want to put them...
Yeah, because the VHS will wear out after a while, you know? You only have a few years, and pretty soon they start falling apart. That is not long-term storage. So, yes, let's do this. Let's definitely do this. Do you have...
I have three VHS. I have three.
Three tapes? Three players?
No, three video players.
Okay, three VCRs. Okay, good.
Yeah.
That was my first question. Do you have a way to play these tapes back? So all of these video players have a connection on the back that'll connect up to a TV. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to watch them. What you've got to do is get a device on your computer that you hook that connection up to that takes the video coming out of the VCR and turns it into bits.
Computer?
Yes. It's a computer device. Now, there are a number of companies that make these. My favorite... devices, in fact, we use them right now all the time, are from Canopus, C-A-N-O-P-U-S. They were purchased by a company called Grass Valley, so you're going to find them at Grass Valley now, grassvalley.com. And the least expensive one out there is about $100, something like that. It's called the ADVC. AD, it's analog to digital video converter, ADVC. Yeah, 110. Now, the problem with this is it's a FireWire device. You need it. USB is not fast enough. So you need...
I don't think my computer takes FireWire.
It does or does not?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
So you'll need to either get a computer with FireWire or get a FireWire card. That's really important because... The USB devices that they make, they have USB converters as well, but they're just not high enough quality.
I see.
So you need FireWire, but you can get for very inexpensively. Is it a desktop or a laptop?
I have both.
Okay, if you have a desktop, that's the best way to do this. You can get an inexpensive FireWire card for $20, put it in your computer. If you're running Windows...
I have to put inside the computer this card?
Okay, yes.
Somebody has to open up and put this card inside.
Yeah, or, you know, if your laptop has a PC card slot or a card bus slot, you can buy something that'll go in the laptop and it'll connect it up to FireWire. But this ADVC is an external box that needs FireWire in. And truthfully, if you want a decent quality conversion, you pretty much need to get... in my opinion, a FireWire device. Now, there are other ways to do it. In fact, our chat room is recommending standalone boxes that will can play back a videotape and turn it into a DVD. That's another way to do it.
No, because, the DVD itself, when it gets older, the...
I think you want it on the hard drive. I agree with you. You can burn DVDs, but you have the master on your hard drive. Ion makes a box VCR to PC. It's USB. I haven't tried it, and I'm always skeptical because USB is not fast enough to send high-quality video.
How long does it take to convert?
It takes exactly 1 hour for every 1 hour of video.
Hour video?
Yeah, it's real time. You have to play the video back. There's no way to do a VHS playback faster than the length of the VHS.
Take me 1 month.
Yeah, well, you got 100 videos. But then, think about this, Lucia. You can put them on YouTube, and the world can discover your amazing ability, and you'll be famous.
No, it's not only I'm famous enough. So.
What kind of dancing?
I do international dancing, but also belly dancing.
Oh, that's neat. Well, you're going to need something. The fundamental concept is you need something that takes the analog video from the VCR and turns it into digital data that the computer can handle. That's a box. That's a converter box.
Thank you. But what if I already I'm going to get FireWire card and everything I connect?
That's what I would do.
Program to?
Yes. Yeah, I'll tell you about that when we come back because we have to break right now, but I will tell you about that. And we'll put this all in the show notes, techguylabs.com. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme. Call 866 the number 2 GetNet to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We're trying to help Lucia get her belly dancing videos on YouTube. There's huge demand for them already, Lucia. Our chat room's going crazy.
No, I don't want to put them on YouTube. I just
just for personal use.
Belly dance video. I have just international dance video from all over the world. I have a big collection. It's very very valuable and rare.
So well, then we really want to do this right. You know, the truth is, Lucia, you might want to just, there are many, many services that will do this for you. And then you don't have to buy any hardware. You don't have to do any
no,
messing.
No, but they are a lot. You don't.
Oh, I know. It's expensive. Yeah, yeah.
No, it's, I have a lot of videos. I'd like to put them on YouTube, but
just put a few of the best ones on so we can see them. I'm just teasing you. You don't have to do anything, Lucia. I'm just teasing you. Now. So here's the deal. So you, as you understand, you need to get something that converts the analog video into digital so you can put it on the hard drive. You can, truthfully, if you're using Windows, Windows comes with an editor, Windows Movie Maker, that'll be fine for, you know, snipping it up and putting in pieces. You know, if one tape has...
But can I just keep them as a data? Put in a hard drive?
Absolutely. And then, by the way, make sure you back these up on other hard drives and you use Carbonite
or something like that.
Yeah, backup's important. But once, because once you've done the effort, and it's going to be effort, if you've there is no fast way to do it. It takes exactly as long as it takes to watch it to digitize these.
No big deal. As long as it takes because tapes. They're getting old too.
What I'm saying. You got to save these, not just for convenience, for size, but because they will wear out. They'll stop, you know, they're not going to work anymore. So there are a number of companies. I personally like the ADVC 110. It would be worth putting a FireWire card in your computer or getting a.
ADVC
110. It's from Grass Valley. That's about $200. They make a 55 that's cheaper that will work also. And you could, there are USB solutions. Are you on Windows?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you are because you don't have FireWire. There's a company, and I hate even saying their name because no one can spell it. It's a town in Long Island called Hapag. Well, I'll put this. Yeah, forget it. Don't even worry, Lucia. I'm going to put this in the show notes. Here's what you need to remember. TechGuyLabs.com. I think you can spell that. But Hapag. HAUPPAUGE.com. Forget it. So I don't know how they stay in business with a name like that. But they said, I've asked them this many times. They say, well, this is the town we're in. But nobody knows how to spell it or pronounce it even. They says, well, it's pronounced like hop hog. I said, well, you should spell your website HOPHOG.com then because nobody can find it. Anyway, they make a device called the USB Live 2, number 2. And it does exactly what you want to do. It'll hook up to your VCR. You don't need to buy a FireWire card. You can actually plug in the USB connector to your PC.
You said, I'm sorry, USB 5.2?
Live, as in live on tape, L-I-V-E.
Live. Okay.
USB Live 2. You could Google USB Live 2 and you'd be able to find this.
Okay.
It's not very expensive. It's very simple. You know, the video isn't super great on VHS anyway, so it's not going to matter that much.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't care about quality. I just keep it for myself.
This is probably the best solution. You don't have to open the box. You can use it on your laptop or your desktop. It's $49.
Okay.
It comes with software that will let you import it and do it all. So you don't have to get any special software. You can cut it up. It'll work on almost anything. Sometimes the issue with, we've used this device ourselves, and we had problems with lip sync, but that's because we're talking heads. I don't think that's an issue on a dance video. You know, the music will be close enough to the dance, it's not going to make you crazy.
No lip syncing.
No. So if it were Shakira, then that's another thing entirely. But no, this is probably the simplest thing for you. It comes with everything you need, and it's $50. And you can order it online.
And do you know what extension is going to be? Is it like movie file or IV?
It'll be an AVI.
Oh, AVI, that's good.
Yeah, you'll be able to play it back. You'll be able to show it to your friends. You could, if you see something really good, you could even upload it to YouTube.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, but
why
it's
not?
Extra time, and I, you know, that's my collection. I don't want to just share.
Just the good stuff. You're so selfish, Lucia. You're keeping yourself to yourself.
No.
Do you do flamenco? No. Do you ever flamenco dance?
Yeah, I have everything. It's a world, international world, like the best dance company.
Oh, yeah, you can't share it because it's not just you. It's other people, too.
Yeah.
So you can't.
There's some videos very old from 1940s and 50s.
Wow.
I have very rare collections from all over the world.
Well, please save this and do consider sharing it with the world, because that's one of the things that makes the internet so amazing is a lot of this rare stuff, you know, that would die otherwise. It'll go away. If it's on a videotape, it's going to go away eventually.
Unfortunately, the world don't really care about dance.
The world cares. The chat room cares. We're all begging you, Lucia, please.
Okay.
Now, Aaron B. does make a good point. You might not have a problem with a lip sync, but you might have trouble with hip syncing, so just be careful. No, I'm just kidding you. Hop Hog, the USB Live 2. Lucia, pleasure talking to you. I look forward to learning more. Take care.
Okay.
No, I know. No, Wu Ten is telling me in the chat room she obviously doesn't want to upload this stuff. I know. I'm just trying to work on it. Jason in Weirs Beach, New Hampshire. Hey, Jason, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, greetings from beautiful Lake Winnipesaukee, New Hampshire.
Is there really a Lake Winnipesaukee?
Yeah. You know that big place where all the bikers go, Laconia Bike Week?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. When is that? Is that coming up?
That was last weekend, actually.
Oh,
safe to say it, the city still exists.
That's close. That was a close call. What can I do for you now, Jason?
Hey, overnight, I'm a trucker, so I was listening to WLW. And then I heard it again on WBZ this morning that they're talking about making changes to the power grid in the United States. Well, probably North America, but they're saying that clocks can be off by like 20 minutes on the East Coast and advanced by 2 minutes in Texas or something. Some of varying frequency and stabilizing.
Wow, that's very interesting. I hadn't heard about the change. This is businessinsider.com. A change to the power grid could make your electric clock run up to 20 minutes faster. See, these electric clocks account on your power being 60 hertz. 60 cycles per second. So they kind of count the cycles, and then they know what time it is, right? So the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, by the way, this is a proposal, has suggested that it not be exactly 60 hertz, that maybe 57 hertz once in a while, sometimes 64 hertz. Now, they're going to do a test in mid-July. That's very interesting, what we'd have to do is part of the problem is that these clocks, especially the less expensive ones, are not designed intelligently. You know, a good clock would have a crystal in it, wouldn't rely on the frequency of the power grid. But of course, most clock radios are cheap.
You know, this is funny because quite a few years ago, didn't they tighten up the 60 hertz to make it so it was more reliable?
This is fascinating. You know, I hadn't heard about this, and I'm looking at it. I guess it's to make it, I don't know, maybe more flexible. I don't know. Let me do some research into this. I am so glad you brought this up, Jason. This is the first I've heard about it. And yes, the Associated Press is reporting this as well. They're going to be testing it next month. Let me do some research and find out more. Thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now I'm scared. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The North American Electric Reliability Corporation. Did you even know there was such a thing? NERC? They run the nation's interlocking web of transmission lines and power plants. And they think that it's too much trouble too much work to make sure it's exactly 60 cycles per second. Now, I imagine in other countries, they don't monitor it as closely as we do. But they say that the East Coast clocks, I don't know why West Coast clocks won't be off as much, but they say an East Coast clocks may be off by as much as 20 minutes a year. Oh, wait a minute, a year. West Coast clocks, 8 minutes a year. In Texas, 2 minutes a year. In other words, don't worry about it. Some clocks will gain as much as 14 seconds a day. I don't think it's nothing to panic about. But that's why they're doing the test. They want to see what happens. Tom O'Brien, who is the man in charge of time at the National Institutes of Standard and Technology, he says, I think there are going to be widespread effects. He says, but if you have problems, don't worry. We will continue to provide the official time over the telephone and on the internet. You know, okay, 20. You see, that's the problem with this headline. Clocks could be off by as much as 20 minutes. A year. Well, big deal. Come on. I'm not going to worry about this too much. But there's something to pay attention to.
Well, we could have a problem here. Our atomic clock, however, will always be accurate because it measures time using the decay rate of cesium.
Jason in... that was Jason. So anyway, Jason, that's a great... thank you for passing that along. I will get my Poindexters working on that, and we'll see if we can find a solution. The article goes so far as to say
even some computers may be affected.
I don't think any computer I know of, no computer on your desk or your lap, uses the frequency of power to determine time. I think they all have clock crystals, all of them. So I don't think I'd worry about it too much. I think it's going to be okay. Well, now, wait a minute. Now, Dieter Cat in our chat room, not his real name, says he works for the electric company with capital E and a capital C, the electric company. He says he has to take NERC training every year. And here, this is encouraging. Dieter says, and frankly, I don't fully understand it. Okay, I just, you know, nothing to panic about, Jason. It's going to be okay up there in Lake Winnipesaukee. Nothing to fear. Jay in Providence, North Carolina, Leo Laporte, if the bikers didn't get you, the clocks won't. Jay, welcome to the show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, I'm planning to buy a Mac when they release the Lion OS and probably at least one extra hard drive, mm-hmm. but I'm very afraid that the Windows machine that I'm using right now isn't going to make it to the day that I buy it, and I'm wondering...
The clocks are ticking.
Hello?
Do you think you can make it a month?
Just 1 month?
That's all, yeah.
Yeah, I think probably a month, but I'm just wondering if I could... put something to, if I could somehow transfer the Windows files to something in the meantime.
Are you going to run Windows on the new Mac?
No.
No. You just want to save your data?
Yes.
Yeah. How big is the hard drive on this old machine? Probably not that big, right?
I've got 280 gig, but they're the pre-SATA type.
Yeah. So what you do is you go out and you get a 200 gig hard drive at your local computer store. That'll set you back $50. You plug it into the USB port and you copy all your data onto there. Now you're good. You should have been doing this anyway. You don't have any backup at all, Jason?
Well, I've got, I'm Jay.
Jay, I'm sorry.
No problem. I've got, I use the two drives. That is, they're pretty much identical.
Well, they back up each other. Yeah, you know what? I would get a backup drive. They're very cheap. 80 gigs sounds like a lot. It's nothing. You can get a terabyte drive probably for about $50. So it's not going to, that's 1,000 gigabytes. You're going to have plenty of space. The good news is this drive, you'll be able to use it on your Mac as well. It's very handy to have an extra backup drive like that. So that's what I would do, Jay. And then you don't have to worry if the Windows machine dies before Lion. You got the data, and that's the main thing. You should be doing this anyway. It is not sufficient to have a backup inside your machine. I mean, it's good. That's could be a part of a backup strategy, but you also have to have a backup that's not, because what if the machine blows up? or the motherboard dies. You know, that's your backup inside your machine is very convenient, but not very safe. In fact, this would be a good time for a Carbonite ad. Matt, is it a Carbonite ad now? Or is it a Nod 32? I'm checking with the control room. Apparently, they're 20 minutes late. Hello, anybody there? I guess they all went out to lunch. I don't know. Let me talk about Carbonite. And if not, it's okay. We'll give them a free ad. Carbonite is, because it's very apropos for Jay, Carbonite is a great backup solution that is off-site. Now, so it's good to Jay to have that external drive. In fact, that's the fastest, easy way to make a copy right now today before you go to bed tonight. But you should also have an ongoing backup that's automatic that you don't have to think about, and it's not where your computer is. It's off-site. It's on the internet. Now, there's a couple of advantages to that. First of all, if the worst happens, you have a fire, a flood, a hurricane, a tornado, a tsunami, you've still got your data safe, even if everything is destroyed. But also, you can access that data even before a disaster happens. You can just go online with your Carbonite account on a Mac or a PC, and there's your stuff. They even have smartphone apps free for iPad, iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, so you can always see your data. I like that. It's kind of cloud storage plus backup. Try it free for 2 weeks. Just go to Carbonite.com. Use my name, Leo, as the offer code. If you decide to buy 2 months on a 12-month subscription, 2 additional months, 14 months for the price of 12, again, you got to use my name, Leo. Carbonite, it's the best way to back up. And you got to back it up to get it back. So do it right with Carbonite. Jake on the line from Laguna Niguel, California. Hi, Jake. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's great. How are you?
Good. I have a problem with my Blu-ray player, actually. I got it about a year and a half to 2 years ago, and the brand is Memorex Blu-ray player.
Okay.
And I put my Blu-ray discs in there, and they're outstanding quality. They play really great. But one of the things with Blu-ray players is I heard they can play your DVDs. So I put my DVDs in, and then it plays it, recognizes it as a DVD, but every 5 seconds it pauses and then it continues, pauses and continues.
Oh, how annoying. Yeah. Oh, that's annoying. Yeah, you know, you got a cheap Blu-ray player. You'd think it'd be easier for it to play a DVD. It may just be something that's broken. It should. The hardest thing is to play back a Blu-ray. There's a lot more data. You know, the software involved is more complicated. A couple of things you could do. First of all, sometimes these players have, I think all Blu-ray players have an Ethernet jack.
Yeah.
You might see if you can update the firmware and see if that fixes it.
Okay.
And if not, I'd bring it in and say, hey, I can't play a DVD. It may just be it's broken. I believe it's a different laser, and it may just be that's out of alignment or messed up. It's easy to play a DVD. If you can play a Blu-ray, you should be able to play a DVD. Now, and this is a very good point David Bix in our chat room is reminding me, if it's a commercial DVD, if it's a DVD that you burned yourself, there may be some issues. The DVDs that you make yourself are not as there's not as much luminance as there is on a commercially pressed DVD. So some players do have trouble. That could be the source of the problem. But I don't think that's right. I think that should work. So I'd bring it back and see if you get a refund or a replacement. Larry, Long Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great, Larry. How are you?
I am a video teacher at the local high school. I'm just outside of Long Beach.
Great.
And I help my students cover many events which air on a local community cable channel. The problem is that cable channel is just a small part of the community. The high school serves 5 different cities. I got 5 different political cable units. I got.
You know what's great? I don't even know why they do local access anymore, because we got this thing called the internet.
Right.
That everybody can see. So here's what I would do. There's a company called Ustream. They're free. Ustream.tv. There's a company called, we use both Ustream and Justin.tv. YouTube has a live thing. All of them will do this for you for free.
Well, what I was trying to do is, it airs in the local cable channel. I have Win TV, I can pick it up. Is there a way of taking that feed off of Win TV and then running Ustream?
Sure. What Ustream, they have a program called Ustream Producer.
Right.
It's essentially their branded copy of Flash Media Encoder. All it needs is a video input. As long as the Flash Media Encoder can see the video input from the Win TV, it'll take it, it'll turn it into bits, and it'll send it off to Ustream, to your account, and people can watch it. It's that simple. That's what we do. It works great. Hey, we're out of time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week.